I think at this stage, if there are any questions or things that you want to talk about, because I can't hear so well, I think really you need to come up at the front and then we can have a conversation. But this is the questions and answers time, and so the floor is yours. So, but I'd like to, if you have questions, I would like to hear. So please do come forward, and we'll see what comes out of it.
Yes, it's the last question.
All right.
I've been trying to meditate for many years and I can't do it. I don't know what is it, how do you do it, and basically I'm just so confused.
All right. Well, what you don't realise is that you just do it. So you have an expectation of meditation, and then
is it like counting 1 to 10? Is it challenging your mind to think of nothing?
Okay, I'll give you something to meditate on, shall I?
Yeah.
All right. I'll give you a mantra to meditate on. All right. This is it. Can you remember that? No, 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 this is it, that's it. Next. Yes.
I have read in various books and philosophies about that everybody's our spiritual friend, whether they appear as a friend or as a fire. But if you look at
sorry, can you say that again? I didn't get that.
Everybody who comes into our life, who crosses our path, could be looked upon as a spiritual friend.
Oh, right.
Because we could actually have a really nice relationship with someone, and we could have a relationship that's not so nice. And some of the teachings that I've read, and I wanted to know what the Buddhist angle on this was. If you're not getting along with someone, is it just that we have to learn a lesson from them, to learn to do forgiveness? Would you say that? When you talk about forgiveness in your talk, is that what you meant?
All right. So when you say that you bring up this suggestion that everyone that comes across our path in life can be viewed as a spiritual friend. Yes, of course. That depends entirely on how we. We choose to some extent how we view other people, don't we? Mm-hmm. But we have to make that a very conscious exercise.
Mm-hmm. If they're not being very nice to us, are we supposed to look through their human behaviour and see they're enlightened self and believe?
Okay, well, it's not possible to understand everybody unless you have the developed eye of the Buddha, who can see, well, that's just how they are, you know, that's the karma, and that's just how they are. In that sense, the Buddha is a friend to all. He's not, he understands that people are the way they are because of their past karma. He has that wisdom eye. But you see, in Buddhism, when we use the term spiritual friend, I think we are using the term quite specifically for someone who can help us on the way, help us on the path. So by all means, you know, receive all beings, everyone you meet, with a heart of goodwill and friendliness, by all means, but take special note of those who lead you to the good, who can give you a wise reflection on yourself, who is uplifting at the right time, who can give good advice in times of difficulty. So that's very different from how we relate to people we encounter day to day. I think it's quite clear. We don't need to say, oh, he is a spiritual friend, but she's not. It's not a matter of making going out of our way to distinguish between what is, who is, and who is spiritual enemy. Or you could say, well, everyone's here to teach us, which is true. Everything here is here to teach us.
That's what I meant when you
thought,
is everything for us to learn something
from? Yes. So in that context, then we say, if we want to say, okay, everyone we meet is our spiritual teacher, then what we say, everything that we experience in our lives is here to teach us. Okay. See, coming back to the mantra, this is it. You see, it's a way of frustrating the mind that wants to go on to become lost in doubt or the reality of this moment. It's just to connect. This moment is where we begin. So it can. It's not just a mantra, just to subdue or suppress all other mantras. But it's a way of recollection, coming back to the moment. Ajahn Sumedho's version of that is, this is the way it is. He's constantly pointing to our immediate experience. First of all, to recognize, like the people in this room, we're all different, okay? And certainly in the Buddhist community, you can see we're from different nationalities. And so it's important to recognize that we have our intentions are the same, to understand ourselves, to come to the end of suffering. It's important to just accept that we come from different conditioning environments, you know, Sri Lanka, India, Thailand, England, America. It took me a long time to actually appreciate what karma was or is, because in immediate sense it's what we're experiencing from moment to moment, and I don't pretend to understand the intricacies and in-depth of karma. That's something that only a Buddha would have the power to know, but it is to see how we're conditioned. Like, we have in England, even though nominally many of us might be Christians, we have Christian values, we're brought up with Christian values, even though we don't call ourselves Christian, that's the culture we're brought up with, and so these are the values that we measure the rest of the world by. So that becomes our yardstick. And then most of the time, of course, we don't realize we've got a yardstick by which we're measuring the world. And the beauty of community is that we have an opportunity to discover what our world view is. It's when we have those minor clashes. Suddenly realize, oh, the values I hold, it doesn't seem to mesh with the values that someone else has, or we just have a different priority of what's important. Could be a simple thing like putting the spittoons and the water jugs out at the mealtime every morning. Well, do you put the jug in front of the bowl, or do you put the spittoon behind the jug? Well, as we might have a conventional agreement that the jug goes behind the spittoon, but it could be different. It depends what country you go to. I don't think Ajahn Sumedho would mind me saying, he talks about American idealism, that helps me to understand Americans. They can have very fine ideals, and that's what built America. And so idealism is what America is much about. But then these days it's much about all sorts of other things as well, so I better come to the end of that one. But karma, one has to be careful how much time you spend on trying to understand karma, because the Buddha said, I think he said, it was one of the indefinables, is you can spend endless time trying to trace back the conditions. You could interpret karma as, well, it's like in simple ways, like if you have an expectation that's not met, one invariably suffers disappointment. Now that can seem a very trivial thing, but it's quite a skill to live without laying expectations on people and events. It's just one example, because we can spend so much of our lives, you know, expecting, like most of us expect. Once we go from school, we expect to go to university and be successful and get a good job and a good salary and a very, really, really decent pension package, and then expect to have a retirement at 60. And then, of course, how many of us are disappointed? We don't get that. So that's the ideal that we're brought up to expect. I know very few people who've actually been able to live that lifestyle. I have the benefit of a long and full retirement after a steady, successful profession.
Yes, we're not creating any more
conditions, really. Your karma is about conditions. Yeah, sure.
Regarding karma, if you believe that you have bad karma from your previous life, which a lot of people do believe they do, can you improve this life by being good karma?
Can you prove what?
I said, if you believe that you have bad karma from your previous life, which I've met a few people who believe that, even myself believe it, can you improve this life by doing good karma?
Well, possibly, but it would be best to just look into the views you have about karma, because if we just explain our bad luck or misfortune on the past, then or how we're feeling on the past, we're on a downer, for example, because of my past karma. It's a way of not taking responsibility for this moment now.
Well,
so
I just don't believe that my karma, I'm improving. I don't know why. I just seem to be doing good, but nothing seems to be coming back.
No, I'm not going to put any energy or effort into proving one way or the other, but just inviting you to look and see. Now, if you change your view about karma, then you could change. It's always now. The view you have, or the ideas you hold about spiritual path, does have a profound effect on how you experience life.
Trying to improve his life by doing good things. The way I feel is that if you have the positive thought living in the now, then any previous karma could be set at naught. It's this continual cycle, because it has a beginning, has a middle, and has an end. Every part of suffering, which is what we listened to last week. And if you let it go, and you let it go gently with love, and you can think, I've experienced that, and it's at the end now, and go forward, living in the now, would you say that the previous karma can be set at zero, naught? Because thinking that it's set at zero, we'll let it go. Would you think that's a way
to put it? Give it a try, but now. Just to say that the Buddha's view on karma, it's not like a mathematical equation. Negative karma is balanced by positive karma. If we insist on recollecting what we've done in the past, okay. Now this is the main difference between the and I don't wish to offend any religions here, but just receive what I say sort of tongue-in-cheek with a sense of humour. But this is the difference between Roman Catholic pastor or the Christian priest who will go to the dying and the Buddhist or the Buddhist layperson who will go to comfort the dying. Well, the Christian will say, repent of your sins. And then the Buddhists will say, just remember all the good things you've done.
Yeah.
what's the effect? So see for yourself, what's the effect? And then when you do see the benefit, not just in doing good deeds, but then recollecting or the result or the good feeling or the uplifting quality that arises from not just being good, you know, just the natural result of living a wholesome life. And then that's how you incline. You incline to do the good. It becomes natural. It's not something you have to make a special effort to do. Eventually, the mind, one's mind, just doesn't wish to, in argument, it doesn't wish to assert its own views. It doesn't wish to get involved in conflicts or any sort of behaviour that asserts or reinforces one's ego, because when we suffer, you can bet that there's a self there, you know, there's a self. There has to be a self that's suffering. But when you live a life of like selfless service to others, or not so much caught up with having to defend one's own self-image, which many of us do, behaviour is dictated by this feeling of having to defend some image we have of ourselves. We can invest a lot of energy in that. That's why it's a great blessing to discover the benefits of living a selfless life. It doesn't mean denying, it doesn't mean negating oneself. It just means not getting lost in having to defend or keep sort of strengthening our sense of self, because we identify the sense of aliveness with the sense of self, which can be very convincing, but it's also deluding.
When somebody comes to us that is throwing rubbish at us, and I've been in that condition myself, I have 3.5 years of being on receiving bullying, so long as you don't bring yourself down to the other person's level, you don't betray yourself,
then there's no harm done. In fact, you learn a lot, because if you can still give back, if you can still be there when that person needs someone, when everybody turns their back, and you've had the rubbish thrown at you, then it's given you an opportunity to learn something yourself and to grow. You know, so all these conditions come to us in life to help to make us the people we are. We really look back on everything and say, oh, it could be karma, you know, I've done this and done that. We don't know what we did in another life. So how can we say what we've gone through?
We're living in the past, aren't we?
Yes, I mean, you can't bring yesterday in today. It's an impossibility. It's gone. You know, we just
by the time setting it at naught.
I believe that probably we all have good and bad karma. You know, the ups and downs. There's not one of us been saints right the way through our existence. You know, we all have ups and downs. But we are today exactly where we are because of what we've been through. That has enriched us and made us who we are. And I think, you know, if we look at that and see the beauty of life and the opportunities it's bringing to us, then it should take the weight off you.
Good. Well, I can agree wholeheartedly with what you say. In my own experience, I can honestly say that one of the best lessons I have learned from life has been invariably through the difficulties, even just living through the difficulties. And as I was relating early in my talk, saying that the best thing we can offer at the moment is our own happiness, whatever condition we're in. Now, that's to phrase what I've learned in someone else's words, but from somewhere I read that what I learned from experience was, what I noticed was, through living in difficult conditions, even in a spiritual community, where it seems like you can't make the people around you happy, and then day in and day out that gets you down, it really hits rock bottom, and then you leave that place unresolved, it's very painful. And then to recollect, to go through that habit of recollecting the grief of the separation, it wasn't until I started to reflect on, well, never mind, what was my intention? And I realised, my intention was good. Well, what's important is not what's happening outside, it's what's one's intention is. And then I could actually start to feel good about what otherwise I'd remember as a really bad experience. Even though I didn't understand at the time why living in a certain place was so impossible, I had to come away from that place to contemplate it and then realize, oh, well, what was my intention? If I started to think, well, what was my intention at the time? And I realized, oh, my intention was malevolent. then I deserved to feel bad about it, but my intention was wholesome. And then because of that, then I realised, it's how I... What's important is my intention, and that's my duty, to pay attention. and not get lost or caught up in external stuff. We can't always understand why we can't get along with people. And so I think today one of you has touched on that. How can we get along with people we don't understand? And we have to recognize that there is a limit to our understanding. And if we insist on understanding everybody, then that can be a cause of grief, even though it's an ideal, a high ideal. We can't always. So to recognize one's own limits of understanding is itself wisdom. And yes, definitely.
Start from here.
Yeah.
I'm just curious to know what you mean by selfless. If indeed we have intentions and we have understandings, then we're not being selfless, are we? We're actually we're there as a person thinking, feeling. The selfless that you speak of is irrelevant, but is without all that, is it not?
Yes, okay. I'm talking about the sort of selfishness where we're so preoccupied with what we need or want out of a situation that we become insensitive to the context in which we're in, that we're just a part of a whole. It's when we're lost we're stuck in what we need or we want out of a situation without regard to others. I can remember, I was brought up in a household where I was taught, don't be selfish, don't be selfish, don't be selfish. But that's very confusing. I can still remember as a child being hollering and crying over being persuaded to share a milk chocolate Easter egg. And the mother was saying, don't be selfish, don't be selfish, don't be selfish. But the Thai approach would be to show the child the benefit of giving and see what the feeling is, how good it feels to share with what you've got, even be it so small, and just to demonstrate to the child the delight of giving. This is a small thing, but it's a very for a child, it's the formative time of their lives, and so little incidents like that can colour the whole of one's life. Well, we can't be selfless all the time. It's to realize not self, it's something that we discover in meditation. don't take it out of context. You still have to function as a self in daily life. Just see what the sorts of things that you get preoccupied with, how we invest ourselves. So there's a conventional self, and we don't take it to be, we encourage not to take this as being a fixed identity. So that's the value of realizing the not self through meditation. That whatever we experience in our mind, whatever we experience in our daily life, not to make the mistake of saying, well, this is what I am, and this is what I am permanently. A teacher, or a solicitor, or a fireman, or whatever. And then relating it to mind. You're not always angry. We say, when you're angry, you say, I am angry. But when there's awareness of anger, when there's sufficient presence of mind, then, okay, we acknowledge, I'm angry. And it hurts, and then it's only in that moment of mindfulness that there's an opportunity to change and break the pattern. I've enjoyed spending some time with you, so thank you for coming, and enjoy the rest of the summer.